Hi, I'm Will.
And I'm Mike.
And we're both product designers, and you're listening to This TBH, a podcast about product design.
This week, we're talking about making the jump to leadership, whether it's suitable for you and the choices you should consider along the way.
We'll be talking to Martin Redding to find out what he thinks great leadership can bring to a design team, and how he made the jump from an individual contributor to head of design.
Most recently, Martin was head of design at Zoopla, formerly head of digital experience at Virgin Atlantic, and is now working on a new stealth mode startup.
We also have a lightning interview with Ollie Strang, a product designer at Novoda.
Recently, we spoke with Martin to get his thoughts on design leadership and making the move to management.
Martin, thank you so much for joining us. Last week we spoke with Luke Murphy, and we were talking a lot about how design leaders, they tend to start out as maybe a senior IC individual contributor, or perhaps a principal designer. And often the business starts to scale and there becomes this need for design leadership. And you just find these people who are great designers, but maybe not great people managers. And they just sort of get themselves, they find themselves thrown into this new position of leadership, perhaps not equipped with all the skills that they need to do that role. I was just wondering, were you one of these people when you sort of found yourself in your first leadership position, or were you one of the lucky ones?
No, I was very much the former. But I can't say that I was thrust into or you know, kind of preyed upon by management. I kind of went down and chased that myself. And I guess it's probably similar to a lot of people in that you kind of are molded to believe that a manager role is somehow a step forward from being a contributor, from being a practitioner. And that's kind of the ultimate aim. And I don't think I had any clue that you could go into something that formed the shape of leadership but remained an individual contributor. Things like staff designer and principal designer I don't think really worked at the time. I think, and also at the start of my career, I probably didn't understand the kind of weight and the level of responsibility of managing people. I think in my head, a head of design was like some sort of Don Draper figure who just wafted about and said spurious things, and everyone ran around and did what he said. And I thought, well, that sounds cool. I could just go and do that. So no, I wasn't one of the lucky ones who kind of started from that position of management. But I don't know that many people do. I've on all my travels, I've kind of yet to find, more than a handful of people who have been in kind of pure management roles who have then gone on to lead design teams.
I definitely found when I was making that transition, I felt like that move into design leadership was like the only choice, and that if I wasn't becoming a design manager, then I wasn't progressing. But I know a lot of companies, they want to sort of pitch this idea of it's like a multi-track system. You can further progress down that sort of IC route, or you can go down that leadership route. Do you feel like that's much of a choice, or do you feel like, I know personally, I felt like the management choice was like the correct choice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the correct choice. I'm still not sure if it is the correct choice at this part in my career, but I think there's a great dependency on the kind of, I guess, design maturity, for want of a better way of describing it, in an organization, or maybe it's just kind of tech maturity, or maybe it's how forward thinking they are. But I've certainly been in management meetings where we've been reviewing candidates, and people who have actively said that they don't want to move into people management were then somehow assessed to be, you know, like lacking in ambition or too kind of restricted in their thinking. So I think in a lot of organizations, I mean, particularly in the types of organizations that I started my career in, it was that or get left behind in some way, shape or form. It was that or kind of somehow get relegated. And I'm a big fan of the dual track system. I think you have to be at the right scale to use it effectively, but I think it does allow people to move forward through their careers, really honing their ability to craft and really just finding the things that people are passionate about and where they want to dig into. And I think that lots of people in our discipline, for whatever reason, will eventually find their way into some form of management, even if it's temporary, even if it's a thing that they try in some way, shape or form and return to an IC role. I think that kind of everyone has their moment and they do it. It comes at different times for different people, and I think that it's unfortunate that when you don't have that dual track system, people just kind of get forced there or out. So I think it's a good thing. I'm a big fan of it. I advocate it.
It's interesting that you say that you have to be kind of a certain size to support it, because I know people at large and multinational companies such as Microsoft, the other large tech companies, where they say that they have this dual track system. And some of them are on that dual track system, but they feel like they're still not quite as empowered, that it doesn't live up to the promise, and that those that have taken the management role are progressing more than they are. And it's more just kind of a carrot to try and get good talent to come. Oh, you're not going to curtail your career by coming here. We can still support you. And then that never really materializes.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say anything about Microsoft in particular, but I think that by definition, any system or organization is employed in various ways and shapes and forms and ultimately abused. I think that's the kind of nature of them all. But I think, you know, to kind of peel that back a little bit, you have to kind of really be clear on what your definition of progression is. And if progression is money for you, then there's no real argument for that. I don't see why a principal designer and a design manager or a head of design should be compensated any differently. Their contribution to the organization and to the product and to the output, in my mind, is equal. If it's control, and that's the kind of the sense of reward, if it's the level of impact that you have, then I would come back to that relationship between the IC and the design manager. And if they're not working effectively together, then a level of control can be kind of tipped in favor of one or the other.
I feel like my sort of initial sort of assessment that the management is the correct choice, I would like to agree with you that a dual track system can work, and that I suppose what I'm trying to get at is it feels like that sort of the push to go down the leadership route perhaps is because of a stigma within the industry, the idea that you're going to get into a more prestigious position, a more advantageous position by going down that leadership route. And I wonder perhaps, is that continuing down the IC track, should it be a much more viable option? Just a stigma remains. And I sort of wonder how we've sort of come to that position.
Yeah. 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 I think there is I agree with you. There is a stigma attached to it, but I think over time that will dilute and disappear. I think those things are kind of left over from previous kind of hierarchical structures and the ideas of, factory workers and the people on the floor and the people in the management and all that kind of stuff. But I think over time, those kinds of things will work their way out, I think. But there's also the kind of the recognition of those job titles of principal or staff or lead designers. I don't think, at least here in the UK, they're not fully embedded in a way that's clearly understood. I mean, you know, you can go from one tech company in London to another and their principal designers and staff designers are slightly different and doing slightly different things.
So off the back of that, is it maybe useful to define what design leadership is, to try and differentiate it from these other roles, such as a lead designer, for example? If you're a lead designer, how's that different from design leadership?
Oh, Michael, that's a can of worms you've opened. I mean, leadership is not necessarily, you know, leadership is not a job, right? It's a role and a thing that you assume. It's not something that you can be kind of given. Someone who's a midway or a senior designer can demonstrate leadership qualities within their field, within their level, within their group, what have you. So I think we should kind of be careful about the difference between the manager and the leadership there. And to answer your question more precisely, I'll focus on what's, you know, manager. So in my head, you know, the IC track goes all the way to the point where the principal designer, the lead designer, the staff designer, whatever you kind of make the top of that track in your organization, in your definition, that person is responsible for the outputs. They're responsible for the work and the quality of it and driving that on a continual basis. They're the people that, you know, beat everybody up in the design review. They're the ones that kind of chase down the best methodologies. They're the ones that ensure that the output and the process to that output is as good as it could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
The managers, I think, and the management team are, in my head, the ones that are responsible for the environment in which that exists. And I think that's the key definition for me. I think, you know, you can take the world's best designer from the, you know, world's best design team, whomever you think that may be, and you could drop them into another organization and it won't make that the best design team. Right? They're the best designer because they have the best people around them. They have the best product managers and the best marketing folks and the best sales team and tech team and so on and so on and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And so the design manager's job is not necessarily to design the product, the thing, the output. It's to design the environment and the team. Right, that's how I see my role, is I need to ensure all the things that are around the designers are all there in place, that they've got the best tools, that they are staffed in the right way, that they've got the best budget, that they understand the business and the business problems and the business goals, that they have a good relationship with this team and that team and this team, that they're connected in the right way and they have the right people in them, all of those things. For me, design managers are not necessarily the people with an entirely different skill set to the designers. They have a very similar skill set, but they're just designing a different thing. They're designing a different layer.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of the layer around the design team. That's how I kind of like to distinguish the difference.
Is that different from design ops?
I think it encompasses design ops. Okay. Yeah, I think it encompasses design ops. I think that's a factor in it, how the team operates and the processes within it. But then it's bigger because it's you're also designing the way that design is perceived within the organization and outside of the organization, you know, because the reputation's part of the design manager's role. You have to design the way that it operates inside the organization. If the ICs are responsible for understanding the users and understanding the business needs and then creating and, you know, testing and creating the right solutions, I think the design managers are responsible for the same thing, except it's a different set of users, because the users are, you know, the part of the business that it connects with. And then the things that you need to test are the processes and the org structures and all those kinds of things.
One of the things that Luke Murphy mentioned recently in his Lunch and Learn was that a head of design, they need to have creative skills, they need managerial skills and operational skills, but too often they're evaluated or even hired on the basis of their creative skills. Mm. And these managerial and operational skills are sort of are left out for whatever reason. And I can imagine that's definitely the case when you're sort of taking this principal designer or lead designer and elevating them into this management position. How can people in this position sort of develop those managerial and operational skills? What should they be looking out for?
You mean the people moving into the management roles?
Yeah, because I think there's too much emphasis on this creative aspect. The assumption is that someone who has good creative skills will make a good head of design.
Yeah.
But then that's only one third of the picture.
Right. How can they develop those skills? I mean, I think that the majority of product designers that I've worked with have those skills, but they are just applied in a different way. They're looked at through a different lens. I don't know that I specifically went out and learnt how to manage a team of 40, 50 people. I didn't, you know, specifically learn how to or get training in developing relationships with product managers and tech teams and those kinds of things. But what I did do is I took all the things that I'd learned as a product designer, and I found a way of using those, you know, because again, sort of, I don't know, keep banging that same drum about the design of the design team, but I think that as you design products, you kind of learn all those skills. You learn how to create empathy. You learn how to identify problem areas. You learn how to prioritize things. You learn how to kind of look for patterns within research. You know, the research that I do as a design manager is I go and listen to the marketing team and find out why they have the relationship that they do with the design team. I go and listen to the sales team and see what they think of the design team. And I go and talk to the product managers and find out how they find working with my designers. That's my research, and I do it in the same way that any product designer does. I have a Miro board and I throw notes down and then I do affinity mapping and I come up with those things. I think that the most designers have those skills. They just haven't applied them in those same ways, or perhaps recognized the moments in which the skills and the tools that they have can be used to huge effect. You know, I think that I might be just saying this to win fans, but I think that product designers are immensely well equipped to deal with lots of things. But it's not often that I see them taking all those skills from designing products and applying them to different design challenges.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to agree, right? Like, a product designer has such a huge range of responsibilities.
Right.
And I think chiefly among them is empathy, which I think is a huge part of being a manager. It's just sort of changing your mindset to apply that to an organization of people rather than a product. And I think making that change in mindset can be quite challenging at first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lots of the same things. You know, you arrive in a new role or you establish a new team or whatever, and you can see a thousand things that need to be better. And then you've got ambitions to be the next XYZ team, right? And you can't go and fix all of those things, and you have to start from the foundations in the same way that you do with a product. You've got to deal with the tech debt, and you've got to deal with those gnarly bits of the system that don't work how people think they're going to work. And then you start building up towards it, and then you use things like you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and maybe at the top of that triangle for your design team is beers on the roof, or I don't know, whatever, you know, whatever that kind of self-actualization is for a design team, where they have their own blog or something, I don't know. But you know, that it's the same thing, it's all there. And as a product designer, you get kind of given these wonderful skills and capabilities that I don't think are very different from management skills and capabilities. And I've read a lot of excruciatingly awful management books, you know, those kind of dry business books that have a person with a beige suit on the back cover. They're terrible, but I've read lots of them, and every time I've read it, I just kind of can't help but feel that this is stuff that we're already doing in product design. There's not much in there that hasn't already either found its way and been translated into some sort of design language, or is part of our process for you know, creating things that are user-centered.
It's kind of similar to the design thinking kind of principles, right? Of there's these things that designers do, and you can apply them to more than just design. You can apply them to business problems. It's a very, like, you can apply them to management as well and find success.
Right. Yeah, exactly. David Butler wrote this fantastic book from his time as the VP of design at Coca-Cola, and it's all about design at scale and how it can impact business. And he talks about these radical ideas like prototyping and testing things. And I'm reading this thinking, God, this guy just goes around writing these books, and it's brilliant. It's fantastic. But it's all the things that you and I, and I guess the people on Triangles and the listeners of this would know and do on a daily basis. He's just doing it at enormous scale. And he's extremely articulate in the way he translates these things into business terms and terms that the business respond to. And I think that's quite a significant part of the manager's role is to find those terms and to find those kind of key phrases that are kind of swelling around inside the design team that matter to the design team, and explaining them or translating them to the business, you know? And I've gone so far in other teams as to write like translator sheets for the teams, particularly in large organizations that are not kind of design driven or tech mature companies. You know, it's very difficult to get traction on improving an experience and making customers feel happy. But if it's a revenue driven organization, you can talk about design debt and you can bet that people will be listening because they don't like debt. No, and if you talk about content overhead, they get very twitchy very quickly. And it's just those simple things. I'm just sort of taking the things that matter to the design team and conveying them in a way that matter to the business. And that's kind of the design manager, part of the design manager's role.
I think being that sort of ambassador for design, it has a lot of indirect impact on the team and on the business. And I can imagine one of the things particularly myself, struggled with when sort of initially making that transition is getting used to the idea of not having direct impact. You know, as a lead designer or principal designer, your contributions, they're very direct. You know, I designed this thing, you can see it on the homepage, you can see it on that, on the product or whatever. And then when you move into that managerial position, suddenly you're not the person designing things, but you're sort of the, you're greasing the cogs behind the scenes that makes that design happen. And I just wonder sort of, how did you personally find that transition? Was that difficult for you when you were sort of making that transitionary period into management?
Oh, no, it's really hard. I was terrible at it, in fact. And it took me a while to understand the difference and where my impact was and how to, you know, see it and measure it in some way, shape or form. So, yeah, I think when I kind of first started making that transition, that was like the most, I think I was running, you know, multiple side hustles, all these kind of projects in my head, because I was in the day kind of dealing with management tasks. And then, you know, kind of in my time, I just had this stuff in my head that I had to get out. And I felt like that was my outlet and that was what I was designing and things like that, which is not very healthy to kind of compartmentalize those things, I don't think, in retrospect. But then what I came to realize over time was that if the thing that I'm now designing is the design team, I need some way to be able to measure it and understand the difference that I've made and whether or not that's through kind of, you know, their happiness and how engaged they are and how we're retaining talent or attracting talent, or the size of the team or the metrics within the team, whatever those things are. But for me, individually measuring them so I can say, you know, I started when I took the team over, it was here, and after I've done this work, it's now here. You know, those are the things that where I started to actually start feel like I was having an impact, and that was my kind of reward, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, you have to find ways to sort of measure your own personal impact, and that personal impact changes so much when you're making that transition.
It's very easy as a designer, like you said, it's there on a screen. Or, you know, a piece of paper or whatever, you can point to it and see it, but it's kind of harder to point to a team and say, look at how great the team is now. You know,
yes, it's a lot more abstract as a concept.
Right. But I think it is possible. You know, I'm a kind of habitual note taker, and I'm constantly writing kind of notes of how things have gone over the course of a month. So I was super excited when Bragg Docs launched, because I've been doing that for years anyway. To have an application out there for it now is a dream come true for me, because that the ability to kind of look back over time and see all these things that you've put in place and the foundations that you've built and the things that you, you know, little wars that you've won in order to get to the team to where it is, all amount to your output, right? That becomes your portfolio, for want of a better way of describing it.
And I suppose going back to the point you made earlier, we already have a lot of those skills to move into that leadership position as product designers, and perhaps a good product designer, they shouldn't be looking at pointing to their own work and saying, look how good this looks. They should be saying, look how happy it makes the user. And sort of by comparison, when you move into that leadership position, you're not saying like, look how good this looks. You're saying, look how happy the team is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly the same thing. Those become your metrics. I mean, you can still, if your team does have particular metrics associated to it. I mean, I was talking to someone recently about it, and they have a special set of metrics for the design team, which I'm still trying to get my head around. But whatever those things are, those ways of engaging with it, yeah, I think they become really important. And you know, my time at Virgin, that's the kind of organization that takes that kind of stuff really seriously, and they have a lot of engagement surveys, and they have a lot of ways to measure people's feelings about their work. And for me to be able to say, the team was here when I took it over, and then after 2-3 years, it was then here, and it's never been recorded like that before, and so on and so forth. You know, that's a huge badge of honour for me, and I put that on my CV.
Given the similarity we've been talking about in terms of the skill set, for an ICE that's looking to make this transition, do you think they should jump straight in, full-time management role? Or maybe like a player coach transitional role? What, in hindsight, how do you think it's best to approach that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know very few people who've gone and just white knuckled it straight in and really kind of been okay with that. I think that is a harsh transition, because there's not a lot of, at the moment, there's not a lot of support, I don't think, for designers going into manager roles. I don't think there's a lot of kind of groundwork there for people to fall back on. The frameworks don't kind of really exist in the same way. I did it over quite a long period of time in a player coach role, probably longer than I would have, I could have and should have done, and is healthy to do. I think that you can only sustain player coach roles for a short amount of time, particularly if the team's scaling, right? And I think it was right there in your last podcast, Luke had a really good stat about how much time per direct report you take. So if you're sat within a product team and you've got 8 direct reports, I mean, how much work are you actually going to be able to do? How much are you going to be able to keep up with that product team and contribute to it? So I think it only works in kind of quite controlled moments where you have small amounts of direct reports and you're responsible for a product that maybe has another designer in the team or doesn't need, you know, doesn't need 100% of a designer through its sprints and stuff like that.
I think the metric Luke used was 10% per direct report, right?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds clever. I've never measured it, but it's, you know.
Yeah. I don't know how measurable it is. It's just as a rule of thumb.
It's a stat now. You've said it on a podcast, so I think it's true. I think it's that's official. How it works.
So from the flip side, if I'm a IC, I know that my manager should be telling me what to do, what I should be working on. But what also should I be looking for and expecting for from design leadership? And particularly around sort of bringing me up and developing me to hopefully one day replace them.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's two sides to that I think are kind of worth tackling separately. One is, you know, the progression and the opportunities that a manager should be continually creating for the people that they're responsible for, and whether or not that's an IC who wants to kind of start dipping their toe into a management role, or whether or not it's furthering them as an IC and you know kind of laying the path for them. And I think the other side of it is you know, really kind of looking at what an IC needs from a manager and being much more solid and, I guess, demanding about that. I was in a conversation with a friend of mine, and he came up with this really great analogy of an IC and a manager, which was like a, you know, Formula One driver and a team owner. Right, the IC being, you know, you're just going to show up, get in the car, and just drive the wheels off it, and they need to be able to come back and say, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, like the tyres are not kind of where I need them to be, and the aerodynamics and the strategy for pit stops and all that kind of stuff, and have that line of communication, and know that the team manager is going to take away all the hassle of dealing with sponsors and organising the mechanics and all that other kind of stuff, so you can just focus on doing that thing that you are exceptionally good at. And I think that's where that relationship needs to kind of get to, where you have a dialogue between the IC who can say, these are the things that I need to be the best designer possible and do the best work here. And the design manager needs to be able to communicate back where the compromises are going to come, where the strategic decisions are coming from, so they are clear on it, and when they just need to, you know, go hell for leather and just do some overtaking and get on with it, you know. I stretched that metaphor to hell, didn't I?
But that's a great metaphor. I love that.
It was not mine. It was Michael Stanley, who's one of the principals at Zoopla, and he's a Formula One nerd like me. But I think it speaks really beautifully to it needs to be a two-way dialogue, and it needs to be an equal level of respect between the two. Like, you're exceptional at that thing, and I'm going to be good at that thing, and I'm going to make sure all these things are in place for you to do your job, and vice versa.
I think that can be quite a difficult sort of relationship for a lot of ICs to believe, perhaps. The sort of the traditional expectation is that management asks things of you and you fulfill them. So asking for resources and support and whatever it is that you need to be great at your job. So what can ICs do to sort of feel more confident about being more demanding of management and leadership? And how can leadership and management sort of create a more supportive environment where people feel comfortable asking for these things?
Yeah, it's a pretty big question, but I think there's a lot of power in comparison. I think if you have within your organization, and, you know, be it tech or product or marketing or whatever, a high performing team, to be able to compare those two things and contrast them? And if not, then to be able to compare, or probably additionally, to be able to compare and contrast to other teams in other organisations and say, look, they have this and they're given this information at the start of this piece of work or this project or this product or whatever. And that's helped them do this. So I think that there's quite a long way that an IC needs to go out to discover those things. You know, for an IC to just kind of arrive at their manager and just say, I can't work like this, you need to just fix everything, it doesn't give a manager anywhere to go. And equally, you know, a design manager, it would be unreasonable for them to rock up a principal's or a designer's desk or, you know, in their time and just say, I just need you to be a better designer. You know, they both parties have to work hard in understanding what's necessary to them as individuals in order to do their job. And I think there has to be a mutual respect. I think the kind of the strange dynamic often occurs from the fact that, you know, right at the start where you said how lots of managers come from IC roles. So I think lots of managers at this point in time have a, you know, pretty clear understanding of what it takes to be a good designer, or at least has an inclination of those things. But I don't know that it necessarily goes back in the other direction. I don't know that many designers understand what it takes to be a good design manager and what those things are that will make their environment more effective for them in which to design. So I think there's probably a lot of work that design managers can do in helping the ICs understand what their role entails and the kind of things that they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long, really, really long-winded answer, but I think an IC can probably do more work to understand what the managers do and what they're working on, what their priorities are, where their pressures are coming from, those kinds of things. And just what they do all day as well.
It's more that empathy stuff, right?
Yeah, I hear that designers are good at that.
I've been told before that that's really what one-to-ones should be for. And if you're talking about upcoming work or the roadmap, you've sort of done it wrong, because the one-to-one is really that time to sort of talk about what is expected of one another, and that goes both ways.
Oh, yes, it definitely goes both ways. And there's a one-to-one has got to be the designer giving the feedback and the manager giving the feedback, not feedback, but the information that they need to kind of to do their things that they're going to do over the course of the week, right? It's the same, going back to that Formula One analogy, it's that conversation, right? You're coming off of the track and you're discussing, oh, what do you need and what do I need? And this is what's happening and here's what you need to know. Okay, great, let's go to it. If a one-to-one becomes just a one, then I don't know what the point of it is. So you're just filling calendar time at that point, I think.
You can learn more about Martin at www.martin.design or on Twitter at Martin Redding.
This week's lightning interview is with Ollie Strang, a product designer at Novoda based in London.
What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Ollie Strang, actually Oliver, but it feels really formal when people call me that, so I go by Ollie. Originally from sunny South Africa, and I've been living and working in London for now 10 years. God, that's a long time.
What have you been working on recently?
I have been working on recently a native app for a relatively well-known telecommunications company. I'm not going to mention names. Sort of centering around sort of their new IoT devices offering, which has been pretty interesting. I've also had the opportunity to mentor some of the Loughborough University students, which has also been really a really interesting learning experience, to be honest.
How did you get into design?
Well, I originally studied film and I kind of fell into it in some ways. It always is one of those things that a friend of a friend knows that you know how to do Photoshop, start doing pitch decks. It worked out from there that I was welcomed on to a very small startup as a lead designer. And when I say lead, very much the only designer. But it was a really great experience just being able to touch a lot of different areas and kind of get a really good intro to just this whole product design type world. And from there, yeah, just kind of figuring it out as I went.
Why should people at you on Triangles or on Twitter?
This is a hard one. I've been a part of the community for quite a long time, since it was sort of very early days. And the one thing I've always really liked is the people behind it. I mean, beyond that, we're all designers, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone's been really helpful to me, especially in times when I was sort of having maybe a difficult time or trying to figure something out in terms of my work-life sort of balance. So ideally, people can at me just to have a good old human chat, to maybe just vent. If I don't know the answer, hopefully I can point you in the right direction to someone I know that might be able to answer that question. So reach out.
What would you most like to learn from others?
This is an interesting one, because I also think sometimes there's just an endless list of things to learn. But right now I'm trying to learn a bit more about service design. I just really enjoy sort of the wider picture of things and getting into the wider problem. And then also from that, the sort of product strategy side, and just trying to sort of be more methodical about how you go about things.
Tell us an interesting fact about yourself.
Well, this is a good one. Apparently, I'm capable of beatboxing. And the follow-up is, can you beatbox for us, I guess? Okay, so...
Any plugs?
Plugs are like shout-outs, right? Okay, so obviously I'm going to shout out my own company. We are currently hiring... Oh, that's Navoda. We're currently hiring for Android engineers and design leads, so look us up. Also associated with that is the Design Lab community, which is sort of a sort of monthly get together for designers to sort of speak to each other and present to each other, which we're going to kind of try and bring that to the remote world in the next sort of month or so. So if you want to speak at that, please get in touch. And then finally, yeah, shout out to my mom. I'm on a podcast. Hi, Mom.
How can people get in touch?
Imposter syndrome to be damned. If you would like to get in touch, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at Strangutan.
That's all we have time for this week. As ever, please reach out to us and let us know what you thought of this episode, and if you'd like to get involved with the show.
You can find us on Triangles, or alternatively, on Twitter at ThisTBH Podcast.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.